Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning. Thank you again, Brian, for your recorded introduction to this gang of Brieflies who likes to engage every week this time with items on Vachon and far and wide and over the seas as well as here right at home. Just days away now from fall, we've seen our, you know, like the first significant rain of, 2 months. It was sort of a blessing to see, even though it turned the yard into sort of a muddy mess around my place. But I'm Kevin Jones. I'm hosting today. I'd like to say hi to the other Brieflies who are with us. Bruce Hallman, a Guardian of the Galaxy. Bruce, how are you this morning?
I'm just doing great. Just trying to get ready for fall. Sort of all the little chores that I've put off all summer. Sort of like, oh no, I've got to get this in and that in and got to get the crab pots put away and the boat out of the water. I mean, there's all those kind of things that happen in the fall.
The list gets longer and the days get shorter.
They do.
And good morning, Lynn. We see you there in the studio with Truman O'Brien. How's it going with you this morning?
Hey, Kevin. How are you? Good to see you. Good to see all of you Brieflies here and to hear all of you, those that I can't see. I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm like you, Bruce. I've been working on trying to get my lawn ready for a little overseeding, you know, get some new grass thrown in there. And I've been watching some football and got to see those Seahawks. They were looking pretty good on Sunday. It was really quite a good game. I liked it. I've been watching some of the U.S. Open and got to see the two young women of color rise to the top of the women's Open. They were just so young and excited and happy to be doing well. And I just want to give a shout out to the other thing that I saw was on 9/11 was the New York Metropolitan Opera did a televised tribute to the 9/11 victims. And it was conducted by that new conductor, Yannick Zage. I can't remember his final last name, but this is the young man they've brought up from the Montreal Opera to head the New York Metropolitan Opera, and he's such a fabulous conductor. I watched him riveted almost the entire Verdi's Requiem, which is a long piece, but you know, it's been sort of a transitional time for me. I like being in this liminal space of gathering my resources between summer and fall. And, you know, I get energy from this time of year. It's a really lovely time for me. So thank you and good morning, everyone.
You have been busy, busy, busy.
I know.
Just to your right is Truman O'Brien, our guardian of the airways, bringing us all to you via Zoom. Truman, how's it going today?
Good morning. Great. So I just got back from eastern Montana. I went back to Miles City, which is my old hometown. We had our very last all 60s high school class reunion.
Whoa.
From 60 through 69. And this year we actually had in 70 because they helped put it on. So we had to include them. But over 400 people showed up. We had there was an outdoor, you know, gathering where everybody signed up and outdoors for a picnic in the park. And then in the afternoon, there was a car show that they do every year, a huge car show. I don't know how many cars were there, but lots. And then that evening was a banquet, and they resurrected a band that was popular, local band that was popular when we were kids. There was only one original member. And they plugged in a bunch of other folks, but gosh, they sounded wonderful. I mean, I was so impressed. And there was one of our old football coaches showed up. His 88th birthday was the next day after the event. So we paid tribute to him, and I got a chance to have a nice long chat with him. So that was really fun. And I flew my airplane back and there and back. And going there, the smoke was unbelievable. I mean, we were basically on instruments all the way back. It's, you know, 6 hours of of fighting it. And on the way back, it was gorgeous. But of course, coming back, we had headwinds. So it was a little over 7 hours. So I was whipped when I got back, I can tell you. But anyway, that's my story.
And what elevation was that smoke at, Drew?
All the way. We were at 9,500 on the way over. And I asked if anybody had any TOPS reports for it. And somebody said that they were at 14 and they were just barely into the tops of it. So 14,000 feet from the surface. And by the way, we could hardly, I mean, we stopped in Great Falls for fuel. We had to have it get a vector to find the airport. It was so smoky. I think the visibility was down to like 4 miles. And then Miles City, when we got there, it was the same way. We had to go, you know, kind of navigate our way over to it. But, well, I will say one more thing. I did hear George Bush's speech. He was at in Pennsylvania for the memorial there, and it was excellent. I don't know if any of the rest of you heard it, but he did just an absolute fabulous job. I thought, man, I don't know who wrote that speech, but they did a nice job. Anyway, there we go.
All right. Well, that's one segue to, I know another environmental activist of the Briefleys, Gail Kellner, is here. And I just think, you know, we hear about the number of acres that are burned, but think of the volume of the atmosphere that is full of smoke. Yeah, it's amazing. Gail, good morning, and I hope you're doing well. Thank you for joining us, joining us by your phone today, I understand.
Yes, I was out on the peninsula this weekend and was really, really lovely around Port Townsend. And got to walk in the rain most of the day on Saturday out there. Nice, gentle rain fell all day. It was lovely. And then Sunday out to some of the what have become their old military bases that triangulate the opening to the Puget Sound area right there. Mm-hmm. And walked through that. It was interesting and poignant in a way to see these old military bases with their gun turrets and their cement mm-hmm. bunkers and falling into decline, but by also being taken over by nature. They were covered with mosses and grass and brambles, and many of them. And although they keep them cleared, you know, there's some kind of a maintenance program that clearly keeps them updated or, you know, cleared to some degree. There's, you know, it's that change over time. And many of those bases, I, from my understanding, were put in, maybe Bruce can weigh in on this, in the early 1900s. And so very interesting that a little over 100 years old, and they, I'd like to see them turned into peace parks or something at this point. I don't believe we need gun turrets in the mouth of Puget Sound.
Yeah, it's interesting. They were put in the 1890s, early 1900s. And there's three of them at the entrance to Admiralty Inlet. So there's one at Port Townsend, there's one on Whidbey Island, and there's one on Maristone Island. And the idea is that they can triangulate and hit any vessel coming in because you get firing from three separate directions so you can know if you're long or short or whatever. So it's militarily, it's a brilliant kind of concept. Never a gun fired in anger, however. But the connection with Vashon, and this is fascinating, there was going to be another set of three forts at the entrance to Puget Sound, which is technically Puget Sound is only the area south of the Tacoma Narrows. And so there was going to be a fort. North of the Narrows is technically Admiralty Inlet. And so at the entrance of the Narrows, there was going to be a fort at Point Defiance. There was going to be a fort at the heights above Gig Harbor, just to the north of Gig Harbor. And then the very southwest corner of Vashon Island was a military reserve for up until the 1930s.
Really?
Because there was going to be a fort on Vashon. And those three forts would protect the entrance to Puget Sound. But what they found is when they built the three up at the north of Admiralty Inlet at the entrance at the east end of the Straits of Juan de Fuca, they figured nobody would ever get through there. So they didn't have to, so they'd never built the forts. And actually the military reserve on Vashon was used for gunnery practice. So residents along Pole Road discover old cannonballs all the time. But also they came in and squatters settled in there, and ultimately an act of Congress allowed them to purchase the land. And so all of that land on Pole Road is actually mostly old military, a military reservation.
I had no idea.
It's interesting to me that the threats that we face these days are so different in many ways than the threats that we faced at that time that could be, you know, addressed via military. And now we have, you know, threats that have to do with, you know, climate change, as you were talking about, Kevin, and Truman, with smoke, you know, billowing. Wow, was that nearly, I didn't quite catch your altitude numbers, Truman, but that's 10,000 feet of smoke.
Oh, more than that. More than that. It was up over 14,000 feet.
Yeah. And was it down to the ground level?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, right to the ground.
I mean, this is something that we need to address in not unlike the way we, you know, addressed issues in the past, perhaps, by pulling together.
What a concept.
This smoke, by the way, we encountered the smoke about halfway to Ellensburg, and it went all the way to Mile City, which is 150 miles east of Billings. So it's way the heck out
there. Wow.
It's a big, big, big area that was covered in smoke.
Wow. So it sounds like leadership is necessary.
What?
And this, by chance, is sort of the leadership-focused edition of the Brown Briefly. You know, Gail, you mentioned that we have different threats today. And of course, one of those is from a global pandemic, COVID-19. The first example of leadership that I'd like us to have a chance to discuss, although the Beachcomber this last week really opened up the opinions of Vashon Islanders on this topic of our fire chief, Charlie Krimmert. And his decisions regarding the vaccine. Now, I will say that I do not know Mr. Krimmert. All accounts are that he's done a wonderful job with Vashon Fire and Rescue. Folks will recall that the fire department had some significant financial challenges some time back. I don't hear issues around that. So, you know, he's clearly he and others have helped bring us through a difficult time. With the financial aspects of the fire department. But if you haven't otherwise heard the news, or if you prefer to get your news from the Brown Briefly, which I understand at least a few people do, here we go. Chief Krimmert, reacting to Governor Inslee's mandate for EMTs to be vaccinated by October 19th, has declined without stating any medical or religious rationale. Chief Krimmert has asked that his job description be revised to remove the EMT content, because that is the nature of the mandate from the governor. Presumably, if the EMT job description element were removed, he would not be required to be vaccinated. But the fire department commissioners on Vashon have declined his request to change his job description. And the interesting thing that a lot of folks on Vashon reacted to is Chief Krimmert's assertions that his stance on this is based due to leadership. And that is, it's inappropriate for the governor to make medical decisions for others. So his refusal to become vaccinated is vested in his taking a stand against an inappropriate mandate. So curious what Briefly's think about not only the decision-making of the chief, but where we stand on his ideas of leadership. Truman.
I want to say one thing about leadership. In airline flying and working with crew resource management techniques that have been taught, we talk about the concept of leadership and followership. And the followership is one in which one suppresses their own I don't know how to quite say this, but it's to follow the leader, to you know, use your best judgment, but follow the leadership. And that doesn't mean that you follow that leadership blindly. It means that you use your logic to evaluate the leader's position and work to help complete the mission using the leader's leadership. So it's a different concept, but I think he's doing a poor job of exhibiting followership when it comes to the government and the way it works. So that's my opinion.
Gail, what's your thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, if I'm quoting you right, his objection is that Governor Inslee is making medical decisions for others, but he himself is making medical decisions for others by choosing to vaccinate. And in fact, supposedly leading others to not vaccinate, because that puts us all at risk. So in many ways, I find that a very convoluted standing on your head to understand that particular statement, you know, because certainly people who are choosing not to to become vaccinated are contributing to variants developing and to the unfortunate circumstance of other people getting sick because of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Lynn, did you have some other comments?
I did. My other thought, and I know it's controversial to go there, but I have a hard time hearing somebody talking about, you know, not wanting our leadership to be telling us what to do with our bodies, when in Texas the laws there being made are incredibly invasive and illogical, and are telling women what to do without a public health mandate. It's kind of a religious argument. I find it interesting that the governor here in this case is sort of saying he's going to really narrow down religious objections and any objections to it, so that there's sort of more clarity about what we mean by that. And it can't just be for philosophical purposes. But for me, it's a shattering kind of a hypocrisy to have, you know, one leader standing and saying, well, you can't tell me what to do, this is my body, and yet that same notion is being challenged on a lot of fronts. You know, I think we're really in some kind of a crux of our country, trying to understand the commonwealth and individual rights. And you know, those are false analogies. I don't want to compare the two because they're so different. But that was what sprang to my mind as we were talking about Kremer.
Also, let's be really, really clear, is that vaccine mandates have been around for generations.
Right.
George Washington mandated that the Continental Army be vaccinated. For our whole country's history, even before we were a country, vaccines have been mandated by government agencies, by school districts. You can't attend school unless you have certain vaccinations. There can be exemptions, but the exemptions are very narrow and very specific. So, I have a lot of respect for Charlie Kremert, as a leader of the fire department and his efforts with COVID and the Emergency Operations Center. But as a community leader, I think this is deplorable.
And, yeah.
It can't be allowed to stand. We can't have our community threatened by individuals who choose not to protect others.
Yeah, Gail.
Just wanted to ask Bruce if he would elaborate on the vaccines available in the time of George Washington, and what were those military personnel vaccinated for?
My recollection is a smallpox. A smallpox was one of the first vaccines that was developed.
Cowpox?
Smallpox. They used a cowpox, as a surrogate infection that provided immunity. And most of us of a certain age walk around with a circle of little holes on our shoulders. And as a kid, if you grew up in the 1950s, at any age, you stood in line and got the salt vaccine without a whimper. In fact, parents wanted you to have it. And my understanding is a lot of parents of school students want their children to be vaccinated. I mean, there are some anti-vaxxers, and I'm not sure there's many coherent arguments against vaccination, a lot of misinformation, but, you know, vaccines work.
I'll tell you just one quick thing. You know, I have, like, as you all know, I have a number of very conservative right-wing friends on Facebook in particular. And they're saying the government is just feeding us a line of BS on this. You know, my granddaughter got vaccinated and she caught COVID. Yeah, well, occasionally that's going to happen. There are going to be breakthrough infections. But I'll bet she didn't die, and I'll bet she wasn't in the hospital. You know,
right?
But in her comment, final comment there was that the government is feeding us a line of BS. That's what she said.
Well, and the you know, the recent reports, I believe, out of Alabama, where people are now not able to get care for things like cardiac conditions, and there's a recent case of a fellow losing his life as a consequence. So. Yeah. You know, the notion that the common good and protecting others. So I know that a few weeks ago we talked about natural selection. It looks like Mr. Krimmert has decided to go with the natural selection approach here. Unfortunately, you take others with you sometimes if you do that. Given the challenges that the commissioners now face, the Vashon Fire and Rescue commissioners, what leadership should they exhibit? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, Bruce. I think they've already demonstrated leadership, and by not changing the job description. I mean, and again, it's one of the issues I have is that, you know, the vaccine's been available for a long time. You know, there was no opposition, no vocalized opposition from the chief to getting that vaccination until the mandate comes along. And it's sort of like, whoa, wait a minute, mandate. And certainly there needs to be exemptions for medical reasons and potentially for some religious reasons. But again, very narrow. I find it not being leadership in terms of being a community leader. It's personal, individual leadership of my life, but that's not what leadership is.
I agree. Linda, well said. The other thing that I would add to that is that I don't want my leaders to swallow all of these false arguments that are coming out. And I think a great sign of a good leader is somebody who can adhere to their principles calmly, you know, without being drawn emotionally into specious kind of arguments. The one that I find funniest right now is the line going around the radio was, well, you know, it was always kind of politically covert before the mask mandates and all these various vaccine mandates have come down, and now it's overtly political. And I just want to say, well, who is making it political? You know, most of us are going down the public health, scientific, risk-oriented mandates. And I think to say, well, it's just now it's really up the game politically is kind of a very revealing statement.
Well, in my mind, it all comes from our number 45.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, had that guy said, hey, we're involved in a pandemic, we need to get going here, wear masks, you know, get shots, blah, 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 blah. This would not be, we would not be where we are today. I've put it fully on his shoulders.
So locally, then with Chief Krimmert, there's a couple of options, right? He will decide that he will get vaccinated and go on as the commission has left his job description as is, or he will decide that presumably he won't get vaccinated, in which case he no longer fulfills the governor's mandate, which seems unlikely he'd remain employed at Vashon Fire and Rescue. So given the former course, if he decides to go ahead and get vaccinated, given what we know about his leadership principles, is he the right leader for Vashon Fire and Rescue, even vaccinated?
Boy, he sure hurt some credibility and with me. I think, you know, when you look at somebody's judgment calls and their definition of leadership, it doesn't align with what I hope for.
Gail, did you have thoughts on that?
Well, I would just say it seems very political, as opposed to, and I would think a fire district chief is not a political leader. They should be a safety leader, not a political leader. So I think that, you know, perhaps under certain circumstances, I might understand that he may hold views different from mine, but he needs to claim them as political views and not masquerade as leadership for health organization and safety.
And to me, I mean, the ultimate irony of this is the nature of a fire department is to protect the community.
Exactly.
By both prevention and by fighting fires. Well, a pandemic is another kind of fire we have to fight.
Exactly.
You can fight it with prevention and you can fight it with intervention, but you got to fight it on all levels. And it just seems to me the ultimate hypocrisy to be a leader of public safety on one hand and yet oppose public safety on the other hand.
Exactly.
Just doesn't mesh well with me.
Mm-hmm. Gail?
Something interesting out in Jefferson County that I encountered, and particularly in Port Townsend, was that the restaurants, Jefferson County has now required that you show a vaccine card that you've been vaccinated in order to eat, dine inside. And it was quite interesting to see that play out over a small community like Port Townsend, and people were they were mandated. The restaurants had to check vaccine status in order to seat patrons inside. So people could take orders to go, but they couldn't sit inside unless they could show a vaccination card. And I found that actually really relieved. Like I was like, I have not been one who's been really comfortable sitting inside crowded restaurants. And it was really nice to go in there and be able to sit down and eat and feel like, oh, I'm safe. And also, you know, it of course protects their staff from unvaccinated people indoors.
I have to tell you, though, it does bother me a little bit. And I'll tell you where this comes from. You all know I was an airline pilot, and I was drug tested for my whole career. Randomly drug tested, and I violently oppose random drug testing because to me it's absolutely opposite of everything that this country stands for. You're guilty until proven innocent, and I kind of get that little bit of that feeling with having to show a vaccine card. Like you, if I say I'm vaccinated, I'm vaccinated. I don't think I need to prove that to anybody. I mean, I don't know. It just bothers me that I have to prove that, you know, that my word is not worth anything.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Truman, that it's so unfortunate. We live in a time where that is what we have come to, that we have to show a card and our word isn't good. But unfortunately, that is where we're living at this point, I think. And there are people who are subverting the mandates and hence that rule.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's unfortunate, I think, that we can't take people's word now. But there are masses of people who are lying and trying to do anything they can to skirt these mandates. And, you know, it's unfortunate for somebody like you who is honorable and wouldn't say that you were vaccinated if you weren't.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of goes against the grain for me. It really does. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that our current fire chief actually probably falls in that same category. You know, he could just say it's religious grounds. He could say it's medical grounds, but he isn't, you know. So in that way, I do applaud him for his honesty and integrity in that way. I think it's misguided in its use, and but I do want to recognize that.
Well, one other example of leadership was is pertinent to schools opening in a recently reported case of a student with COVID-19 on Vashon, to which there was a very rapid response. But in another state, Florida, Governor DeSantis is fighting for parents' rights to determine if their child should wear a mask at school. And he's doing that by banning mask mandates. So an initial court order sided with a lawsuit that was filed by parents to essentially ban Governor DeSantis' ban. So in other words, yeah, it's okay to require masks by school children in Florida. But an appeals court sided with the governor. So mandates, again, are banned in Florida, which, oh, by the way, is a national hotspot for not only COVID cases, but also hospitalizations and deaths from the Delta variant. So our governor is not inclined to ban mask mandates for school children. Generally, what do we think about this example of leadership or about school kids in the school year starting out? Truman, what are your
thoughts? Well, for me, it's no different than you have to have a polio vaccine. I mean, it's you have to have a polio vaccination, and if you could, you should have the, I mean, if you're old enough, have the COVID vaccination, and barring that, wear a mask. I mean, it's just a requirement to enter school. I don't see a problem.
Go
ahead.
I honestly can't imagine a parent who would want to put their child at risk of contracting COVID-19, not only because it may be dangerous to them initially, but the long-term COVID is a real issue that I think we are only beginning to understand the implications of. I can only believe those parents genuinely are completely misinformed and around the dangers. They must absolutely not believe it's a real thing. Or I cannot imagine a mother that would put her child at risk that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly the parents are reacting and going to the courts to sort it out. Meanwhile, it sounds like Florida school districts have the option to deny the governor's mandate and go ahead and require masks to be worn. And apparently many, many students are doing that, at least voluntarily.
Yeah, I'd like to see the logical consequences of all this. What are we going to throw children in jail for wearing masks so they don't get COVID? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, really, it's childish.
Well, what's going to be interesting is to see how this plays out at the ballot box in the next election. You know, if COVID continues to rampage through Florida, if it becomes worse in the schools, because schools have only been in session for less than a month, you know, and in that month, you know, in the last 6 weeks, we've gone from under 500 cases a day in the United States to over 1,800 cases a day.
Yeah.
In the U.S. So we're into a fourth wave surge, no doubt about it. Yeah. And in places like, in places particularly like Florida and Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, that surge is significant. And so are voters going to respond to that when their children are dying?
Yeah.
And their parents and grandparents are dying? It's going to be interesting.
Speaking
and of- just to clarify, Bruce, 500, not cases, but 500 deaths a day to 1,800 deaths a day in the United States. Is that what you intended?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Over the last 6-7 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, Truman.
So speaking of the ballot box, I know this is going to veer off our topic here a little bit, but I found that fascinating that in the recall election of Newsom in California, that last night I heard that the Republican groups are already coming out saying, oh, there was a big fraud in the whole thing, and that they're sure they're going to lose, and so there was fraud in the election. I find that really fascinating that, you know, 24 hours before the actual election starts that, oh, yeah, there's fraud already, you know.
That's right out of the Trump playbook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right out of number 45 playbook.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well,
and the real danger of that, of course, is if you begin to get a significant portion of the voting population that believes their votes don't count, or that votes have been stolen, or, you know, there's been fraud, it just undermines the whole basis of voting in a democratic system. And so it's not just an attack from a political system, it's an attack from a whole process of thought that tends to emphasize authoritarianism over democracy.
Exactly. So, exactly.
It's a dangerous time for our democracy.
What do you think, Bruce? And you know, there's the entire population of the country now, of course, is born into a system in which we're told that we have the ability to select our leaders, and the challenges, you know, are significant, you know, to remove that vote. Do you think the forces of democracy are going to prevail in this country, where, you know, some years ago we talked about Israel and Hong Kong, in which democracy, you know, fledgling democracies were trying to stand up? And you mentioned in Hong Kong that the Chinese are going to win, and indeed they have. What do you think about America?
It's hard to know. I mean, American democracy has been through lots of challenges, and you know, an American democracy has never been a true democracy. You know, there's certainly efforts to get it there, and significant efforts to get it there. But yeah, I think my own projection is I think that the courts and the Congress, if Congress passes the Voting Rights Act, you know, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which it looks like it may well happen, with some compromises being made, and that's the nature of legislative activity. And I'm relatively optimistic that we're going to weather this through. And the real test is going to be whether these voter fraud advocates are the 20% of the crazies out there, or whether there are a larger percentage of the population. And I think they're a relatively small percentage myself at this point. Not that a larger percentage can't be mobilized, but right now you're talking about lunatic fringes.
Lynn, I saw you might have had a comment.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how personal this is getting. And at some point, you know, I think that political things are often decided way down at the personal levels when they're not as abstract and kind of principled, maybe, as we're talking about now. And, you know, I mentioned this to y'all privately not long ago, but I have two examples that have just saddened me recently. And one is the death of a nephew of a really good friend of mine who had not gotten vaccinated yet and, you know, was being hammered on by his mother and his aunts, my friend of whom is one, trying to get him vaccinated. And suddenly this guy got sick and he's on the phone to his family who were begging him to go to the hospital, and he didn't really much want to talk about it and didn't think he was that sick, and the next day he was dead. And they just thought, you know, how horribly sad for their family that this young man didn't feel like he could trust his own mother and his own, you know, family to encourage what might have been best for him. He just sort of didn't know what to do. And then he was embarrassed and ashamed that he hadn't gotten vaccinated, and just bet his life on the fact that, you know, he thought he knew what he was doing. And, you know, that just broke my heart. It made me really sad. And most recently, my cousin Carol, who's living in Alabama with rheumatoid arthritis, for which she has to take immunosuppressant drugs, just told me that she has opted to go off her immunosuppressants because she is at such risk now from unvaccinated, unmasked people down in Alabama. So basically, she's a prisoner in her own home. She really can't and doesn't go anywhere because she is so at risk of this vaccine. And I just feel like that is so sad and so beyond political. It's just turning into personal tragedies everywhere. And I just want to hope that we don't have to suffer too much more of that kind of thing before people wake up and realize this is a public health problem we've got to pull together to conquer.
Gail.
Well, I was just looping back to include both what Lynn shared on a personal note and what Bruce observed from a longer historical standpoint. I think it is interesting that I'm pretty sure this is one of those situations where the truth, which is that this is the virus is a real thing, just that you can't, it doesn't matter how many much you deny it. It's like climate change. You can deny it all day long. It doesn't change the fact that it's happening and that people are experiencing it. And I think that when that happens, then it goes down and is documented in our historical record as to what really happened. And I think that is going to happen with COVID-19 as well as climate change. And I hope our democracy is over time strengthened by these things, or maybe even it's not our democracy. I mean, a worldwide pandemic as well as a worldwide issue such as climate change, as well as other issues like nuclear threats, and there are many that we are threats of corporate power that has outstripped country boundaries. Maybe it's just time for a new democracy that is worldwide, that we are looking at these issues from a bigger standpoint than just our own experience as a country, because we're not isolated. These things don't know borders.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that's I think to the good, again, another example of leadership, is President Biden is issuing a mandate for medium and large businesses to require employees to be vaccinated or be tested weekly for the disease. And GOP critics call the mandate a fascist move and a war against capitalism. But interestingly, in some conservative states like Texas, many Texas businesses feel that this is a cover to go ahead and do what they would like to do. So we can just say another shout out to our President Biden for taking care of that issue. But the one risk I'll just leave with final comments is we are now 16 days away from the next Trump reinstatement day on September 30th. So that leadership that Biden's exhibiting may be fleeting. It's the fifth Trump reinstatement day, by the way. But any concerns from the Briefleys?
I'm going to go on a picnic that day.
We might have to have a little champagne just to celebrate the fact that he wasn't reinstated.
He'll just keep drawing lines in the sand until the real election date comes up.
Yeah.
Then God knows what will happen.
Okay,
more
folks.
Concern is September 18th.
Yeah.